Welcome to the Grow Bold with Disability podcast, brought to you by Feros Care, a podcast dedicated to smashing stereotypes and talking about the things people with disability care about most, to help us live bolder, healthier, better connected lives. I'm journalist Pete Timms.
And I'm Tristan Peters. I work for Disability Service Directory Clickability and am a wheelchair user living with spinal muscular atrophy.
Today's episode of Grow Bold with Disabilities, Growing Bold and Carers. And our guest is Aussie swimming legend, world record holder and Olympic gold medal winner, Kate Campbell. In this episode, we'll speak to Kate about what it's like growing up with a disabled sibling. Kate's brother Hamish has severe cerebral palsy and requires around-the-clock care. And we're going to find out what influence Hamish has had on Kate's career. Kate, welcome to Grow Bold with Disability.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Kate, before we start chatting about Hamish and your family, tell us a little bit about yourself. You were born in Malawi in 1992, the oldest of five kids. What was it like growing up in Malawi?
Malawi is a tiny little country in Africa. Its claim to fame is Madonna adopts her children from Malawi. So I'm like a little disappointed that she didn't pick me, but there were children in greater need than I was, to be fair. Moved to Australia in 2001 when I was 9 years old. So I still have some quite clear memories of Malawi, and it was a wonderful, wonderful place to be a kid. The health and safety regulations are just about non-existent there. And as a kid, that's wonderful. I think as an adult trying to get anything done, it would be slightly problematic, which is why, my family left. But it holds a real soft spot in my heart. And I was due to go back there at the end of this year, but hopefully I'll make it back there at the end of next year.
Now, obviously, people know you for your feats in the pool. How old were you when you realized that you're pretty fast in the water?
I joined a swim club when we moved to Australia, because how else do you make friends in Australia than by joining a local sporting organization? It's like a segue into Australian culture. Did not understand AFL, so couldn't pick that one. And I've been with that same coach ever since. So we've been together for 19 years, which is pretty special. He's known me since I was 9 years old. I just loved it. I was one of those really weirdly motivated children who like fell in love with something and then kind of obsessed over it and was quite happy for her life to revolve around it. I was probably like every parent's dream as a teenager, because all my mum had to do would say, Kate, you need to behave or else I'm not taking you to swimming training. I was probably about maybe 13 or 14 when I was, I looked like I was going to be pretty good, and then had a pretty fast acceleration from there and made my first Olympic team when I was 16. So, it all happened quite quickly, quite early.
Amazing, amazing. But as much as we'd love to chat about all your achievements, we also want to chat a bit about your amazing brother, Hamish. So tell us about Hamish.
Yeah, so Hamish is the only boy out of the five kids. So he's got four sisters. You could either say lucky him or poor him, depending on your stance on if you have sisters or not. How old is he? He would be 24 this year. So he was born in Malawi, and he was a stillborn. So he was born without a heartbeat, and he suffered massive oxygen deprivation at birth, which caused brain damage. And as a result, he has cerebral palsy. So the fact that he's alive and is still kicking on at 24 years old is a miracle. Right from his birth, we were like afraid that we were going to lose him, and then he's had some pretty horrible and pretty complicated health battles since then. So, I think that I've learned so much about life through Hamish, and our family, you know, was obviously changed forever, but that isn't to say that the change was a bad thing. I think that people can often view disability in a way where they say, oh, you know, you poor people or poor Hamish. And I can clearly remember this one time at school, when I was at high school, and I said, oh, you know, just in conversation, oh, I have a brother who has cerebral palsy and he's in a wheelchair. And the first reaction from my classmate was to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I was genuinely confused. I was just like, why? It's kind of great. We get disabled car parks, like we can walk straight into the shops. He's less annoying than your brothers from the sound of things. My parents did a really good job, like right from the beginning, of just normalizing Hamish and focusing that he was a full person exactly as he is, and that while we need to help him, obviously a lot, we don't need to change him, which I think was a really important distinction for them to make.
Was he part of the reason you guys moved to Australia in 2001?
Yeah, he was. So, medical facilities and standards in Africa are not great. And yes, that is the understatement of the year. And so he was actually, he was born in Malawi, but they had, you know, no ventilators, nothing. And he had to be airlifted to South Africa within a couple of hours of him being born so that he could get medical treatment there. And then, you know, having cerebral palsy, he was quite epileptic for the first probably 15, 16 years of his life. So he would have seizures, and there just wasn't the facilities in Africa to cope with that. And then mum fell pregnant with my youngest sister, Abigail, and they just kind of said, it's not safe for you to have another baby here, just in case something happens. So my parents packed their bags, and with four children and mum 7 months pregnant, moved all the way around the world, knowing one person in Brisbane, and they landed in Australia. So I know. But it was in some ways it was kind of wonderful having those, you know, first few years in Africa with Hamish. There's a huge stigma around disability. It's steeped in superstition in Africa, and you know, Africans believe that it's a witchcraft, or it's a curse on the family, or they believe that it's because they've done something wrong, and there's so much shame around it. And mum was able to take Hamish, and here was this privileged white person, and she would turn up to the therapy classes with all these other African women, and it just blew their minds that someone in her position could have a child with a disability. So, you know, even right from when he was little, Hamish was helping to bust through stereotypes and myths. But yeah, his level of care is definitely much better in Australia.
Sure. And you touched on the care then. What type of care and support growing up would you provide to your brother?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say that mum and dad are his primary carers, but we obviously all helped out. You know, if Hamish needed feeding, then we'd feed him or change his nappy. Pretty much our care revolved around just playing with him and including him in day-to-day life. You know, we always made sure that he was front and center in all our family gatherings. And I mean, Hamish probably, while he's 24 years old, he probably only operates at the level of maybe like a 1 or 1.5 year old. You know, he's nonverbal in the sense that he can't speak. He makes noises, and we kind of understand from the noises that he's making, we can kind of figure out what he's wanting. But he's one of those people who has always been able to pick up the energy in the room, and so he always loved being like in the thick of things. It was really funny. For a while, particularly during like the Commonwealth Games, his favorite song would be the Australian national anthem because he'd be able to feel all the energy in the room. And, you know, mum and dad were obviously watching myself and my sister Bronte compete. And so they were super excited, you know, every time we came on. And then if it coincided with a national anthem, obviously meaning that we'd won.
Right, yeah.
The room was electric and Hamish picked up on that. So he used to go crazy every time you'd play the national anthem for him, which I just think is great.
Yeah, that's great. Now, we mentioned moving over here just for the access to support for Hamish. What are some of the other sort of sacrifices that the family has made for him?
Yeah, I guess that in some way your life, when you have when you're caring for a disabled person, in some way your life does revolve around them, in that we can't really take beach holidays because Hamish obviously can't go on the beach, or if we do, you know, half the family goes for a swim and hangs out on the beach and the others stay back on the sidewalk or go do something else. Before Hamish came along, my parents were very adventurous, like really good campers and hikers. And obviously you can do that while, say, Hamish was small and you could carry him. But as soon as he starts to get bigger and need a wheelchair, those things are just unavailable to you. Mm. And now that he's obviously a grown man, he's a lot heavier. So you need two people to move him, or you need to have a lifting device to help. It hampers things like, you know, even something as simple as, oh, let's go away for the weekend. Oh, but we have to make sure that the house is wheelchair accessible. Like, where can Hamish sleep? Mm. Can we get a wheelchair in there? So it just requires a lot more thought and a lot more effort. And now he has quite severe health complications, unfortunately. And so we need to have close contact to a hospital at all times. And we need to make sure that we have all of his drugs there available. There's just a lot of planning that is involved in just about any activity. But in saying that, like, something that has an attitude that we've all picked up from our parents is that we never begrudge that. Like, we never complain about it. We never, you know, get angry or annoyed at Hamish for these limitations. That's just our life. You know, that's just something that we've accepted and we just work around it. I almost like don't even think you've had to make me stop and think of all the things that we can't do. But normally it's just like, okay, what can we do with Hamish? Let's do that. And the other options aren't even options.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Absolutely. I know personally growing up as a power chair user, I always hated that I couldn't be spontaneous. You know, I couldn't just go to the beach like you mentioned, that sort of thing. So in terms of that planning, what was that like as a kid, you know, all that thought going into planning activities and holidays, you as his sister?
Yeah, I guess that it would fortunately, like, my parents did a lot of it. But if I wanted to take Hamish out, like, you know, I would often take him shopping with me. Look, I might have been exploiting him for his disabled car park.
My friends do the same for me.
Like, I'm like, I love you, Hamish, but I also love that sticker that comes with you. But, you know, so I would, and or going to restaurants. So I think that I had to be conscious of it. But if I went to do something and Hamish couldn't do it, I'd be like, oh, okay, we'll find something else to do. So I think that, yeah, there was a lot of planning, but, you know, we're lucky in that we come from a big family. And so if we do go on holidays, we always make sure that, like, half the people go out and have an adventure and half of us stay to look after Hamish. And then the next day we switch. And so that, I don't want to call it a burden, that responsibility, I think that's a better word for it. That responsibility can be shared across many people. I think that it's incredibly hard if, you know, I can't imagine being, say, a single parent with a child with disability, because then that responsibility is on you 24/7. So we've been very lucky in that we have a group of really supportive people in our family, we don't have to go looking for them, who all know and love Hamish and all want what's best for him.
Do you have you ever had carers in for Hamish so mum and dad can go away and have a break, or they haven't really found the need to?
Now they do. Now he does access respite care 3 days a week, and for a long time he was able to go to a special school in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And he used to come back with report cards saying Hamish needs to learn to use a spoon. He never learned to use a spoon. I used to get very jealous of those report cards. I was like, I wish that I could learn to use a spoon and get an A for that. Like, that'd be great. But now that he's obviously graduated from school, he does access respite care. Just because of his health complications, I know that my mum really struggles with things like letting him stay overnight. And she struggles to like relinquish that. And you know, he's been through some really awful times, and she's been, you know, by his side, you know, throughout all of it, you know, when he had stays of months and months in hospital. So part of me can understand that. I moved to Sydney about a year and a half ago, and one of the things that is really challenging for me is not being able to be there and offer that respite to them. You know, obviously with my training, I have very limited time that I can go back and be there as a support for them. And it's particularly frustrating now because I think everyone has a little more time on their hands than usual, but you know, the borders are shut. So I can't even go back and give my parents, I counted back and I was like, they haven't been away together, just the two of them, since probably 2013, which is like,
oh, goodness,
you know, terrifying to me. And you know, I'd booked in to go up and take care of Hamish. But then the border's shut. So, you know, there are lots of things and lots of sacrifices that everyone's had to make.
Mm. Yeah, sure. You touched on then going back and providing some respite for your mum and dad. How do you navigate between being a carer and a sister, or are they just one and the same?
Yeah, in some way it is just one and the same. I think that if your family, you care for those people, and I think that the different people in my family require different needs. You know, Hamish needs me to, you know, feed him or change him, or we sit on the couch and we watch movies together. My youngest sister probably needs care from me in a different way. She, you know, makes me watch all these awful anime movies, which I don't understand. And, you know, I have to walk her through makeup and all of those things. So I think that for me, being a sister and a carer, I think that you can offer care to just about anyone in your family. It's just that Hamish's needs are more specific and probably more demanding, I would say, than having to sit through an anime movie.
Do you think Hamish, or growing up with Hamish in the family, has made you a lot more empathetic to what's to other people in the world?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's he's also just brought a real grounding perspective through just about everything in life. You know, I would sometimes walk in from a really tough training session and, you know, be really angry and frustrated. And there was Hamish. He used to, you know, sit by the sliding doors as you'd walk in the house, and he'd always kind of greet you with a smile, and he'd been sitting there and waiting for dinner, and mum had been, you know, too busy. And then I'd walk up to him after dumping my stuff and be like, oh, hey, Hamish, how are you? And he'd like give me this beaming smile. And then I was like, oh, mum, has Hamish had dinner? She's like, oh, no, I haven't been able to get to him. So he'd just been sitting there waiting patiently for someone to notice that he was hungry, you know, not complaining. And you just look at him and just think, I'm really lucky. You know, I don't have anything to complain about.
And Kate, have you ever witnessed any discrimination or had to intervene on Hamish's behalf? Not that I condone violence, but I have a mate who once punched a kid at school for calling me a cripple.
That is so great. Everyone needs a mate like that in their life.
Yes.
No, I don't think that I've necessarily had to intervene on Hamish's behalf. I think that we might you know, educate people. And I think that sometimes people can get annoyed or frustrated with disability. I know that sometimes when we go to restaurants, the servers are less than impressed at having, you know, even though we've booked for seven people, when they see a big wheelchair come in, they kind of can be less than impressed. Probably the only like real discrimination, but it's kind of funny, is like kids just kind of and they say the funniest things, like, "Mommy, what's wrong with that guy? Like, look at him." And you can just see the parents like dying on the inside. But I kind of think it's a really good opportunity for the parent to just say, "Oh, you know, some people have a disability and, you know, that's just how it is." Or come up and say hello. So I'm hoping that's what happens. But I definitely have a chuckle every time that happens.
I was literally driving my chair through Caloundra like 2 months ago, and this little kid on the other side of the road turned and saw me in my power chair and yelled at the top of his voice, "Mum, why is that kid in a big pram?" And everyone was mortified. But I thought it was great because it opened up the conversation. It allowed me to teach that kid a little bit about disability, which is powerful. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're always great. Or just the stairs, like the big silent stairs, like the little kid's eyes seem to grow to the size of saucers. I'm like, good, you're getting a bit of an education here.
Now, Kate, we're talking about carers. What's the long-term plan for Hamish? I mean, mum and dad are going to get a little bit older, obviously. Siblings move away, a la yourself. Is there a long-term plan? Have you, as a family, spoken about that?
We have a little bit. Hamish's health is not very good. He's on palliative care, but he has been on palliative care for a number of years now. So it could be, you know, he could live for another 10 years or it could be quite a lot shorter than that. And I guess that... we've all said that we will help in whatever way necessary. Our youngest sister actually has like put up a hand and is like, "Hamish can come and live with me whenever like mum and dad can't take care of him anymore." Yeah, it's one of those realities. You know, fortunately, both my parents are really fit and really healthy at the moment. So it's not something that we've had to, you know, sit down and really formalize. But, you know, as they're starting to get a bit older, we will have to do that. But as much as possible, like we would like to be involved in Hamish's care. I think that there are some really wonderful organizations and facilities, but you know, Hamish is a part of our family and has really you know, shaped us all in so many ways that we would still really like to be as involved as possible.
Nice.
He's one of your biggest motivators, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And it's whenever like you call home, he doesn't quite get the concept of telephones. So you just get a lot of heavy breathing when you listen to him. But mum says that he smiles, but he's like, he's really confused. He's quite vision impaired. So we're not sure exactly how much he sees. So we know that he sees like shapes and colors. But when you're around him, he kind of senses your presence and you normally touch him. So when he can hear your voice, but he can't like feel you or like see you, he gets really confused. But we always make sure that whenever we call home, we have a quick chat to Hamish. He's you know, been a very, very central part of our life, and I would say part of, you know, our makeup. And I think that's been a really positive thing as well.
Yeah, very nice. Now, our podcast, as you know, is called Grow Bold with Disability. We always ask our guests the last question, which is, what does growing bold mean to you?
What does growing bold mean to you? Well, I think that, you know, my life motto. Can you have a life motto at 28 years old?
Of course. Of course you can.
Okay. You can have it at 10, 12.
Okay. All right. Great. I guess, you know, my life motto is to be brave. And I think that particularly when we talk about disability, there is so much courage and so much bravery surrounding disability, whether it's the person who's disabled, whether it's the carers, whether it's you know, the physios who work with them, or the hospital staff. And I think that the more people you can envelop in that little bubble, the better. And you know, for me, it's about challenging yourself, challenging society, challenging perspectives. And I think that Hamish definitely does that. You know, I try and challenge myself on a almost daily basis, but I think that Hamish has helped challenge the way that I view life and hopefully go through life. I think he's taught me to be kind and considerate and compassionate. And yeah, I feel like I face life more boldly because he's in it. So yeah, he's pretty wonderful.
Nice. That's one of our best answers, Pete, I think.
That is. Well done, Kate Campbell.
Gold medal, yes.
Kate, thank you so, so much for joining us today on the Grow Bold with Disability podcast, brought to you by Pharos Care. And listeners can find out more about Kate and Hamish in the links provided in today's episode show notes. Kate, thank you so much.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you so much for having me.
This podcast is brought to you by Pharos Care, an NDIS partner delivering local area coordination services in Queensland, South Australia, and the Australian Capital Territory. Pharos Care is a people care organisation committed to helping people live bolder lives. We call it Growing Bold. And for over 30 years, Pharos has been making it real for both older Australians and those living with disability. To find out more, head to pharoscare.com.au.